listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me once again Dr. Peter Treadway. Peter is an independent consultant and money manager and has served as an adjunct professor in Asia. He is currently a principal of Historical Analytics, LLC. It's a consulting and investment management firm dedicated to global portfolio management with a focus on Asia. Its investment approach is based on Dr. Treadway's Wall Street experience. He provides a monthly letter entitled The Dismal Optimist that's produced for his clients. Dr. Treadway also serves part-time as chief economist at CT Risks. That's a Hong Kong company. In this capacity in Asia, he has given occasionally one-day workshops on sovereign risk, so that's an area of focus for him. His distinguished career includes serving as chief economist at Fannie Mae, 1978-81, and institutional equity analyst as a managing director at Smith Barney, 1985-1998, and he was ranked as an all-star analyst 11 times by Institutional Investor magazines. Dr. Treadway holds his PhD from University of North Carolina, an MBA from NYU, and his undergraduate degree is in English from Fordham University. And I should say before I say hello to Peter, you should go to peter-treadway.com, peter-treadway.com. That is a website that provides a lot of very valuable insights into especially what's going on in Asia. That's a freebie. You can go there and get that. You don't have to be a client of his, and I highly recommend that you do that. So, Peter, thank you for joining me today.
My pleasure.
You know, on May 5th, you wrote an article that I read titled "The Outlook for U.S. Stocks Has Turned Bearish," and assuming that's still your view now, more than a month later, could you explain your thinking?
I'm going to qualify. I realized when I look back at that, if the Biden administration gets everything it wants, the outlook is negative. That's really the qualifier. It's a big qualifier. But we have what I view as really an anti-market administration, you know, between taxes and this exaggerated emphasis on clean energy, and all the rules and regulations. These are big negatives. Now, he may not get everything, so let's it sounds partisan. But I can criticize Trump, too.
So, absolutely. Peter, one of the reasons I really wanted to have you on is I think you are really an objective thinker and not a nonpartisan. So in that regard, at least, you're looking out for your clients. So realizing reality is a very essential aspect of what you do. So maybe you could go in a little bit to the climate change concerns. You stated in that article, May 5th article, and I'll quote, you said, claiming that climate policy is not only good for climate, but also will actually make everyone rich is a comforting bedside story, but it is flat out wrong. Could you talk wearing your economist hat? You admit you're not a scientist, so
it costs a fortune. We're moving away from tried and true and cheap energy and to expensive stuff that may or may not work. That's the bottom line. It's all subsidies. You know, even the electric cars, they require all kinds of subsidies. Now, maybe in the future they won't. But so the cost of a full-scale green energy policy is very high. It's not good for the stock market and or good for the economy. And that's the, you know, you can read all you want. It's not true that every scientist in the world thinks the world's coming to an end because of climate change. Climate change has been going on for, you know, as long as Earth has been here. The question is, how much has humanity contributed And that's debatable. And I'm not trying to pretend that I really have the answers on that, other than as an economist, the costs are really very high. Let's say it's correct that the gloom and doom forecasts are really right. Doesn't matter. It's going to cost a fortune and really hurt the economy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The cure may be greater than the disease, as they say sometimes. Well, I know that everyone who, let's say that all the scientists who get paid to write about climate change seem to be on that side of the doom and gloomers. There are independent scientists who beg to differ and are not so sure that it's so clear cut. So it does seem to be a very emotional thing,
though. Well, it's become a government policy around the world. And therefore, if you're a young scientist, you're getting a PhD, and you've got to be on board.
Exactly. That's the point.
This is true for a number of things, but it's really there's been a government takeover of research that started really in the post-war period. And they have to go with the usually there are a number of books, mostly by people who are older and either retired or totally tenured.
Yeah.
So they can write what they want.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Well, just thinking about China, and I know you're focused on Asia, that I'm hearing that China is building a lot of coal-driven electric power plants. And at the same time, of course, there's a big pressure not to do that, not to use hydrocarbons for everything, anything in the U.S. But do you think that China, I mean, we have these agreements. To what extent do the developing countries, are they going to, adhere to these very costly green policies? I mean, I have my doubts.
They're not. You're right. They're not. And, China, we have to distinguish something. People go to China, or they used to. You walk down the street in Shanghai and it's or Beijing, and there's a tremendous amount of pollution in the air. It's worse in India. But that's not climate change. That's particulate.
Yes.
You can't see carbon dioxide. And not only that, it gets recycled in the plant. It's plant food.
Exactly. So, right. Exactly right. Yeah, that's right.
China really has to work at getting rid of, it's unhealthy when people are, they feel as though they have to build more. We had this kind of energy and they needed to develop, but I'm not really thrilled over there putting in a lot of coal plants.
Yeah, well, exactly, right. But they have obviously political reasons to try to clean up their environment as well. I'd like to just ask you a little bit about what I perceive to be some really rapidly changing things geopolitically. I don't know if you see it that way or not. I'm going to be interviewing a person named Michael Pembroke. He's a former judge in Australia. He's written a book called America in Retreat, in which he not only sees America as a declining power, but China as an ascending power. And I'm wondering if, in general, if you see it that way, too.
That's sort of my view. And I really think it's a shame on the U.S. side, because it isn't necessary. But we're making the fact that China is 1.4 billion people and that they're finally... I hate to, this term, China has stood up. You know where that comes from? It comes in 1949. Mao stood in front of the communists had taken over Beijing, and he stood in front of, I don't know, a million people and say, China has stood up. Unfortunately, there were a few nasty things to come, but that is become a line from China. They're not going to put up with insults and being pushed around anymore. So you got 1.4 billion people who they're really they're interested in getting richer or getting less poor and in developing their own potential. And a lot of that means technology. Technology is what is going to drive further human. It has been driving human progress, and it will drive it some more. I don't see how that's a threat to the United States. Meanwhile, the United States is going in the opposite direction, everything from eliminating college boards to all kinds of things that are really not a plus.
No, they're not conducive to a growing economy and a growing national fiber or intellectual.
The Chinese are nuts about technology. Americans really aren't.
Yeah. Well, it goes with mathematics and science, and that's a weakness for the United States for some time, I think, and it's going to cost us dearly long term. So you would generally agree with Michael Pembroke that China is an ascending power.
That part I would agree with. As an American citizen, I hope he's wrong but I think he's probably the latest Biden administration, and taxes, regulations, shut down the Keystone Pipeline, et cetera, the whole litany. These are negative things, and also restrictions, on achievement. That's the latest sort of woke stuff. You're racist if you're smart.
Or if you're good in mathematics, or you like classical music, or those various things. It's just insanity. It doesn't make any sense to me either, Peter. But the U.S. has run these trade deficits for so long. China's had these surpluses for so long. I believe that that's part of the current system, that is the dollar-based system. We needed to have lots of dollars flying around the world if we're going to own the world's reserve currency. Lots of liquidity. People can't really go anywhere else except the dollar, it seems, at this point in time. But the Chinese, in the meantime, are building things. The One Bridge, One Road initiative, for example, they've built institutions, financial institutions and things that they've really come to life in ways that I think are generally positive for humankind in terms of trade and development and all of that. As you say, they're crazy about technology, and so I'm wondering, could you comment just a little bit on the One Bridge, One Road initiative and other things that the Chinese are doing? And also, I'm wondering, how is the United States going to finance these trillions of dollars of new money that's being spent, giveaways to people, so forth, transfer payments? I'm just wondering what your thoughts are, and is that perhaps the weakness that the U.S. is facing, this financial weakness? I mean, we have the military might, and it seems as though maybe that's why we have to think like our whole existence is sort of built around this military might, it seems, and the control of nations and so forth.
The U.S. has two major things that make it number one right now. One is the military. I mean, as Chairman Mao said, all power comes from the barrel of a gun. And we've got a whole armada of ships lined up along the China coast. They don't have any, which is, that's number one. And the other one is the dollar. As long as the dollar is the chief reserve, we have tremendous power, because, with companies that if they do something we don't like, the dollar has to clear through, all of the dollars clear through New York. We can shut them down. And we did that. It was interesting years ago with the Standard Chartered Bank. The CEO was told that the U.S. was going to fine them for violating American sanctions, I think, against Iran. Mm-hmm. And he said, this is BS. We're not going to. But then his lawyers told him, you clear through the U.S., they can put you out of business tomorrow.
Right.
So as long as we have that power, we have tremendous. That's what makes, we can tell Taiwan Semiconductor not to export to Huawei, because we can shut down Taiwan, although I don't think we really would want to do that. But we can, we have a certain power between the military and the dollar. We have a hold over them for now.
Mm-hmm. But Peter, I think also the Chinese and the Russians too have tried to develop an alternative to the SWIFT system so that they could move transfer money around the globe without going through New York. Isn't there something to that? There's some development along those lines.
It's a sort of first step, but I mean, what has to happen is that the Chinese currency becomes a real rival to the dollar. And it can only be a real rival if it's fully convertible, and it's not. So although the Stock Connect program in Hong Kong, if you're familiar with that, is certainly a step in the right direction. It's they bored a hole in the Chinese exchange wall, but that's what has to happen. China really cannot compete with the U.S. until they have a fully convertible currency. And, you know, this move to a digital currency is these are all steps in the right direction from China's point of view. But they've still got much further to go.
I just wonder, you know, what will it take for that to happen?
Continued growth of the Chinese economy and also the Stock Connect program being more successful in Hong Kong. There's not just one thing, and then I always call them the comrades have to let go. I mean, there is something in China, you know, that it's a very top down system in China, and it's been that way for 4,000 years. But they have to let go, and there are people in China arguing for that. So far they haven't.
Well, change is different sometimes. Peter, I want to ask you then, from an American's point of view, with about 5 minutes left here or so, what about the future for Americans investing in Asia? And I know Asia is a big place. There's lots of different countries and probably.
Well, I think Americans should look at Asia for investment. However, the number one place is China. And you do have this risk that the U.S. will do something irrational and wrong and hurt your investments that in some way or another. Well, we already had a couple of Chinese companies got delisted. They put the Chinese blacklisting companies, et cetera. You're seeing, though, from Vietnam and Singapore, things are cooking in the non-Chinese countries. It's a C company for C Corporation. If you're familiar with that, it's trades in New York. It's a Singaporean-based sort of Singaporean, I don't know, Amazon. It's done extremely well. And there a Korean company just came public, Coupang. There are a number of them. There are a number of interesting, and if India would just sort of wake up a little more, that would also be interesting. So, and Japan isn't dead.
Yeah, they've really been locked down by COVID. It's hurt them a lot, it seems. But
the East Asians have a Confucian discipline to do these things. They, it's part of their culture. They can lock down much better than America. The trouble is now lockdowns were necessary at the beginning of the virus because we didn't know what it was. But now we do, and everybody can get vaccinated and get rid of the lockdowns. So the Asian discipline is, in my opinion, working against them.
So you think that what we should really do, everybody should get vaccinated, and I think you were suggesting get rid of the masks and people just go about their business, basically.
Get rid of the masks, go about your business, get vaccinated, just do normal things to stay healthy. And, you know, this locking people in their houses has tremendous side effects of depression. You know, you've seen it all, a whole litany of things that it's bad. And we need to get traveling again.
Boy, that's for sure. Absolutely. And I think things are opening up here in the U.S. and I think Canada isn't too far away from doing some things. But a lot of the rest of the world seems to be way behind.
Well, East Asians are very disciplined. So they lock down. I mean, and in China, you don't walk out of the hotel and go for a Slurpee they know where you are. And the Chinese accept that. Maybe Americans wouldn't, but the Chinese accept that, and Americans have to accept that the Chinese are a little different and they have their own culture. Exactly. But I think it's I think we should get rid of the lockdowns, get rid of the masks, and everybody should get vaccinated. That's my two cents.
All right. Just with another minute or two left here, I'd like to get your ideas, your thoughts about potential problems over Taiwan between the U.S. and China.
Two countries, well, Taiwan isn't officially a country. The two places in the world that the United States has tremendous interest, economic interest. One is Israel and one is Taiwan. Taiwan, we depend on Taiwan to Taiwan Semiconductor to produce chips. But Taiwan is historically part of China. And we interfered in the Chinese Civil War. We prevented the Chinese from attacking Taiwan during the Korean War. And it's really my recommendation in one of my letters is to just let the current situation kick this one down the road, because nobody has a solution for this, because the people of Taiwan don't want to become part of China, majority. So it's damned if you do and damned if you don't. We shouldn't be pushing the Chinese. If we cut off all of the Taiwanese exports to China, we're putting ourselves in the same position that we did with the Japanese, which we cut off oil and supplies to Japan.
Right.
And they attacked Pearl Harbor. It was an insane thing to do, but they did it.
Exactly.
And the Chinese might be incentivized to attack Taiwan. You know, they're getting stronger every year militarily, and we were also encouraging them to build up their military. It's really, but I think we should just sort of cool it on Taiwan, because we have tremendous interest in Taiwan Semiconductor. All the Taiwan if Taiwan were taken off the map tomorrow, the world would go into a depression. There are a lot of countries which could go away and no one would care. I don't want to name them, but not Taiwan, which is, I shouldn't call it a country. The comrades will be after me. But
Well, I hear what you're saying, Peter. Great insights. I want to thank you so much for spending time with us today, and I hope we can do this some more, because you do have a unique perspective. I think, you know, you're an American, so you see what goes on here. You understand our culture, but you're, I believe, married to a Chinese lady. So obviously you know the Chinese side of things and the way they think. And, you know, most of us don't have the advantage of both experiences. So I want to thank you so much, Peter, for being with us. And we'll look
my
to do
pleasure.
It. Well, that's all the time we have for this week, folks. Next week my guest will be Ron Stofferle, who co-authors the best annual book on gold titled In Gold We Trust. He'll be with me then next week. And also Dr. Quentin Henning will join me to talk about the emerging world-class gold-rich polymetallic project in British Columbia that is being explored and developed by SK Mining Corp. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.